אפילו נשמס, אפרים בן אש אנג'ו.
Left of last week, we were talking about one of the last topics in terms of the formal official, and that's the issue of heating up water on Shabbos. We mentioned that obviously to heat up water on Shabbos itself would clearly be an issur d'oraisa. I shouldn't even say that it would clearly be an issur d'oraisa, because there are some achronim who raise a red flag that maybe heating up water is only an issur d'rabbanan. Why? Because water is technically usable before it's heated up, before it's cooked. Some Rishonim will say that when something is potentially edible or drinkable before it's cooked, so maybe that's not considered to be bishul d'oraisa. So that's a question in the first place. And whether that applies to water is also highly controversial. The pashut pshat is that heating up water is bishul d'oraisa. But we're working with that assumption. Because of that fact, that heating up water, cooking up water is such a serious problem on Shabbos, as I was very, very worried about the people who were heating up water in Yisr. In the olden days, they used to keep the bathhouses open on Shabbos, because if you heat the water from before Shabbos, what's wrong? Nothing wrong. So, nevertheless, the Rabbanim made a later gezeirah not to take baths, not to shower on Shabbos, because they were afraid that the bathhouse attendants were heating up the water of Issa. They ran out of water, more customers were coming in, so they would sneak in when anyone saw, and they would start cooking the water on Shabbos itself. So, they made a gezeirah across the board not to bathe on Shabbos. But now, the point that we left over last week is that the Mishnayos, both the Masechet Shabbos and the Masechet Beitzah, make reference to the fact that one is not allowed to take a shower on Yom Tov either, which is very startling, because on Yom Tov, it should be permissible to heat up water. What's wrong with heating up oil water on Yom Tov? You're not cooking on Yom Tov. So why in the world should it be also to take a shower on Yom Tov if you're allowed to heat up the water on Yom Tov? So Tosfos, at the very end of the shiur we mentioned last week, so Tosfos throws their hands up and tells us, you know what? It must be that it's in fact also with the rice that heat up the water on Yom Tov. Why is it also? Because it's called the Dovish Inner Shovel Chol Nefesh. It's something that's not a normal kind of a enjoyment. Because you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov, you're allowed to heat up the house, the water, to put wood into the fire, to heat up the house on Yom Tov. Those are normal things that people do. But showering, bathing, I'm assuming who takes a shower, once in 6 months, he takes a shower. So since washing your whole body, the chaman, is such an exotic kind of pleasure, it's not subject to the kula of Eichel Nefesh. That's why it's this. That doesn't get into a little bit of trouble. The Tosfos says, the Gemara sounds like, Min HaTorah, you're allowed to heat up a schwitz to make a steam room. That you are allowed to do in Yom Tov. The Rabbanan, they did away with that also. So why is that any less exotic? If you're not allowed to shower in Yom Tov, you're not allowed to heat up water for showering midoraisa, because it's called Eino Shavu Chol Nefesh. Why are you allowed to heat up water for the Shvitz? Why is that any less exotic? So Tosfos comes up with a new category. Tosfos writes that when people go to the steam room, they're doing that for medicinal purposes. That's for health purposes. Health is a whole different story. Whenever something's being done, derech refuah, that's called the Dabah Shavu Chol Nefesh automatically. So a brisket Tosfos, there are two ways of being magged there, Shavu Chol Nefesh. Everybody agrees that in order for something to be mutar on Yom Tov, it has to be a normal, within the normal realm of activity. So must be normal. How do you determine that something is normal? So if normal people do it, that's called normal. But even if people don't do it, but the doctor says to do it. If the doctor does, you have to do it. It's good for medical reasons. That by definition is called, automatically, objectively called a davar shavu chol nefesh. The Tosfos says that bathing is not for medicinal reasons. That's just for pleasurable reasons. And since most people don't do it, that would fall short. That would be an issur d'oraisa. Whereas the heating up in the steam room, that already the dermatologist will tell you how to do that. It's very, very important. So since it's important for medical purposes, that's automatically called an Ovah Shavu Chol Nefesh. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it's in that Tosfos that the Bnei Yeshua has his radical statement. And again, as we mentioned a few weeks ago when it came up with a little different context, so please, I always give the disclaimer when I say this, especially there are kids under the age of 21, you have to for sure give the disclaimer. There's in no shape or form is condoning or accepting or honoring any cutting of the following activity. It's an issur galafianias daiti belishum suffik. It's an issur gama min haTorah to smoke in any shape or form. Any kind of smoking is absolutely also for many, many reasons. First and foremost, because it's dangerous. But they didn't know that piece of information back in the 1700s. So not only did they not know that in the 1700s, they actually thought it was healthy in the 1700s. Again, you can't blame. You can't blame the people who didn't know it. So the Bnei Yeshua wasn't aware of the dangers of smoking, so he was working with the medical knowledge of the 1700s, that it was healthy to smoke. So therefore, the Tanei Shul writes, if a person wants to smoke on Yom Tov, it's permissible, even though you're lighting up a fire to smoke a cigarette. And most people, a lot of people, didn't necessarily like that. So it was a davar she'eino shavuch ha'nefesh. The Tanei Shul said it's no mutter, because since it's being done for medical benefits, so therefore it's called the davar. It's automatically called the davar shavuch ha'nefesh based on this taisus. So this taisus became famous because of that famous kul of the Tanei Shul. In the late, at the time, even the Bnei Yeshua, many Achorim disagreed with this assessment, and in the later generations, then everybody disagrees. So Halach Lemaisa, Belishim Sofek, that to smoke all week long is the shortness of deraisa, to smoke on Yom Tov, the Inis Daik, is an Isagoma with deraisa. The only way you can salvage it would say Inis Achal, listen, that would be your best bet, but saying what's well, with the smoke on Yom Tov. But otherwise it's us. Back to that story. So Tosis' whole theory about not showering on Yom Tov is based on the assumption that it's awesome in a Torah because it's a davar she'eino shavuch kol nefesh. So other Rishonim disagree with Taisus. The Rambam and the Ramban don't follow this view of Taisus. Both the Rambam and the Ramban say that the reason why you're not allowed to heat up water for showering is not in a Torah. In a Torah, you're allowed. In a Torah, it's no worse than lighting a fire to read. No worse than lighting throwing wood into the fire to heat up your house. But the rice that's mutter to heat up water for taking a shower, taking a bath on Yom Tov. The reason why it's prohibited is because it was part of the Gezeiras HaBalonim. It's part of the same Gezeiras Mechatzos that we've mentioned last week. Chazal didn't like bathhouses open on Shabbos, for sure, because of all the terrible things that would go wrong. So in one fell swoop, they said, just as on Shabbos you're not allowed to bathe, so too on Yom Tov you're not allowed to bathe. It was a Gezeira Yom Tov on the Shabbos. Now it's a very strange Gezeira. We usually don't make that Gezeira. You're allowed to cook Yom Tov. So there were very, very few things Chazal made a Gezeira Yom Tov on the Shabbos. They really, really didn't want people in the bathhouses. The bathhouses are just a bad place on Shabbos. It's a place where full Shabbos is going to be rampant. And therefore, they felt that we have to get people out of the mindset. It's not a good mindset to think of, I go to shul, I daven a nice davening, I come and have a suda with my family, and then I go to the bathhouse. So we don't want people to do that neither on Sukkot night, nor on Pesach night, nor on Shavuos night, nor on Friday night. We just want everyone to have bathhouses that close. They're off limits on Sabbath and holidays, and Jewish holidays. So therefore, with the Rabbanim, the Medi Gezeira, all bathing is also even on Yom Tov, Gezeira to Shabbos. So, Manav Kimin, at the end of the day, you can't take a bath on Yom Tov. At the end of the day, you're not allowed to take a shower on Yom Tov. So, what's the difference whether it's awesome in a Torah because it's Tosfos, or whether it's awesome in the Rabbanim because they're Naman and the Ramban? So, it may be an interesting flip, a very, very strange flip. Namely, if you think that the only reason why you can't take a shower on Shabbos, on Yom Tov is because of an issa d'oraisa of eino shavuch kol nefesh, one could strongly suggest that that doesn't apply to this man as that. Shavuch kol nefesh, eino shavuch kol nefesh, l'chora should depend according to the time and place. So it may have been true in the Middle Ages, maybe in the 1100s, people didn't shower that often, so it's hard to call it shavuch kol nefesh. This is not as that. I'm hoping that everybody showers more often than they did in the Middle Ages. I would like to say everybody showers and bathes at least once a day. I'm hoping that at least once a day, once every other day. People should be bathing and showering in normal intervals of Bizman Hazeh. And therefore, l'chora, one could argue that maybe the facts have changed. That the same way, almost like the Pnei Yeshua, had certain facts in front of him, so he was magdi or something, and shavuch kol nefesh. So that changes Bizman Hazeh. So it changes in the other direction also. So the Shmir Shabbos Yuchos already raises this question in a footnote. He says, he says you're not taking a shower on Yom Tov today. He says, if Tois is right, that's because of the Yisra, Reina Shavuch kol nefesh, who says that the Yisra applies Bizman Hazeh? So we quote Samach Ron will say that maybe in order to be Shavuch kol nefesh, it has to be something that people do every single day. First of all, that may be true. Maybe most people do shower every day. And number two, where does it say it has to be every single day? If it's normal, every other day, every third day, if you want, month, whatever. If it's something that's within the realm of normalcy, maybe that's also called shavuot lechol nefesh. Exotic pleasures, the guy, I think the description, guys burning these spices, with these bizarre things that most people don't like to do. So that's called eino shavuot lechol nefesh. But if you do something that's within the realm of normalcy, even if it's not every single day, vishtei, that's to be a davar shavuot lechol nefesh every single day. So it would appear, l'fenias daiti, that if you go down the route of Tosfos, that the reason why you can't shower on Yom Tov is based on eino shavuot lechol nefesh, it's very, very hard to apply that rule b'zman hazeh. It's very hard to say that the heating up water for a bath or a shower is really awesome in a Torah today. So Lefini is dying to toast it should be to take a hot shower in Yom Tov. But the problem is, it comes out the opposite. Namely, if you hold it to Rambam and Ramban, that was never really their ice anyway. It was only an Issa D'Rabban in the first place. So if it was only an Issa D'Rabban in the first place, why did they make the Gezeira? It's a Gezeira up to Shabbos. So that gzeira, tacha plus, was man of that. It's the same gzeira. The same way Chazal didn't want in the olden days, you shouldn't be bathing on Yontif, Atif Shabbos, so that applies today also. So it's nimtzu chumra kulo. Tosus, who was the biggest machru, said showering is an isadir aysa Yontif. According to them, it's hetagoma b'zman of zeh. Ram and Ramban, who were the biggest mekil, was, I love Ramban anyway. It's true. And now that isadir one is stuck, but b'zman of zeh. So Lefini is daiti, I think that ultimately when a person asks to shower, the bottom line, Ramban, can I take a hot shower? Can I heat up, throw in the water, take a hot shower on Yontif? So I think according to Tosus, it's mutter. According to Ram and Ramban, I think it's a problem. How do we pass in halacha? It's not so possible we don't pass like this Ram and the Ramban. It's very, very possible that we do follow this Ram and the Ramban halacha. So that's why I'm very, very weary to tell people they can just stop shower just like that. Unless one wants to maybe start the following. There is a, one of the Gedol Echron, the Beis Meir, has a following Chiddush. The Beis Meir writes that taking a hot shower may be a problem. Either the Raisa, the Rabbana, depending on what you think of the Rishonim. But what if I'm not taking a hot shower? I'm taking a tepid, warmish shower. So it's not mamish hot. On the other hand, I did turn on the hot water. I turned on the hot water to take out the chill of the cold water. So it's not a hot shower. On the other hand, it's not that ice cold freezing, you know, a Friday afternoon when you're the 16th person in the house and there's no hot water left. So it's I wouldn't even classify it as a warm shower. It's not a freezing cold shower. So the Beis Meir writes, he thinks that that's mutter. Why? It's almost mutter l'chavadeus. If you go like Toysus in a Shavuot Kol Nefesh, and this man thinks, no, that's called Shavuot Kol Nefesh. People, the guy wants to wash off cold water, and that's very, very normal. He doesn't want to take an ice-cold shower. So that's within the category of Shavuot Kol Nefesh. And it's probably mutter to the Ram and the Ramban also, as we mentioned last week, that the issue of the Rabbanon of washing in hot water is only when the feet wash them in the oven, it's called hot water. If it's not called hot water, it's called cold water, then it's okay. It's not called ice-cold water, it's called kaka water, that's not cold hot water. You wouldn't say, I'm going to take a hot shower. You go, I'm going to take a not freezing cold shower. So according to the Beis Meir, we think that definitely would be mutter. So in the hierarchy of things, when people ask me, Rabbi, I'm really, really sweaty. It's one of those, Simchas Torah days, and I've been dancing and sweating and schwitzing up a storm, and I got another Shabbos ahead of me, and it's not a good scene. So what do you do? So this is the hierarchy. So first of all, I say, those who want to be machmer and those who want to, I think, do what the more credit is, take a shower, you'll survive, splash a little cold water on yourself, whatever. Try to get a bridle, do a little bit. So those who don't want to shower altogether, everyone should get a bracha, but they get a special bracha. I didn't say don't get an extra smell, tov alechem bracha. So if you don't, the best thing to do is not to shower at all, not to get involved in the shower. Those who absolutely feel they must take a shower at some degree in Yontif, so I think the hierarchy is as follows. Take a cold shower. Remember, we mentioned last week that Moshe held that the Iker Adin, if you're really, really uncomfortable, you can take a cold shower on Shabbos also. Because the issue of taking a cold shower was not Medina de Gemara, it was a minute, later minute. It was instituted because people were combing their hair and they were squeezing out towels and all kinds of different things that were going wrong in the showers. So there was a minute Yisrael not to take even a cold shower on Shabbos. So Moshe writes, that minute doesn't apply if a person's in a lot of pain. Kivega held even the issue of hot showers, if the water was heated up, doesn't apply to a lot of pain. Kavakami, cold showers. So I think if a person is very, very uncomfortable, so they have to take a shower, take a cold shower. Those who can't take a cold shower can at least take a Beis Meir shower. They can take not an ice cold shower, can actually turn on the hot water a little bit, take out a little bit of the chill. And those who that's not going to suffice for, and they want to rely on Tosfos, if the whole list doesn't apply, as man is that, against the Ramban and Ramban. So Yeshua is the smach, those who do it that. I didn't say I'm the person who is smach, they're relying on Tosfos. They're relying on some versions of Tosfos, that the issue doesn't apply, as man is that. So, that's the last resort. But those who don't have to reach that point should try to minimize the amount of the shower that's done. So this is technically the formal end for us in terms of Bishul, but we're nowhere near the end of Bishul. We have to hang in there. We still got a while to go. Now we reach the following dilemma. There's a whole series of halachas that are related to Bishul, and the dilemma is where to speak about that when you learn about Shabbos. You learn Kisei HaMalachas, so there's always a question where to discuss them. The dinim that we're going to discuss now are the halachas of leaving food on the fire from before Shabbos, putting food back onto the fire on Shabbos, insulating food on Shabbos, the three surim called Shehiyah, Hachzara, and Hatmana, which are big, big topics. It takes a lot of time to get through. These are some of the most common shilas in the Shabbos. I actually received two Shehiyah / Bishul, whatever you want to call them, shilas in the last 24 hours. One right when Shabbos started, and one this morning when I woke up. About something that happened this past Shabbos. So somebody came to me, we'll talk about this. It may be a shot of the week, so I don't want to give too much of it away. Somebody asked me a shot on Friday night. that they came home very, very late, and they started putting up the chillin, and they put up the chillin 20 minutes before Shkia, and it was nowhere near anything, and it wasn't really, there was no blach, it was no uniform, it could even be the heaven, maybe a problem, not so simple at all. A very, very complicated child in terms of Shahia. And then this morning, just now, I woke up and my phone went, my alarm went off, so I saw. I usually try not to check the messages before davening, but it was staring me in the face. It looked like a juicy shayla. So he said, somebody, a rabbi, sent me a shayla that somebody asked him on Shabbos, the following shayla, that they forgot to plug in the chillant right before Shabbos, and the wife of Bench left, and it was he wrote 6 minutes after Shkia, and she panicked. Gaval, what do you do? So it was a very long shayla. This may be not on a shayla, this may be a whole shir at some point. So she panicked because she didn't want it. She knew that in theory you can ask a guy to do things banish mashas, but if she asks the guy, then it would be shalachim. So what did she do? She asked her kid to do it. So she had her child put up the plug in shul a few minutes after Shkia, and then they realized that was what they said. That may be Maisa Shabbos, that may be Bishal Gavim. So it's good thing I got the shayla on Sunday morning. So, but I had a cool on my sleeve. They would have asked me. I had a cool on the evidence, not to do it. What they did was in a segama, but it did may have been a violation of Seir Sanibras. But maybe the evidence could salvage. Maybe could salvage the shul. The evidence could salvage. I did the Seir Sanibras, and shul with the evidence was also going to be okay. We'll see. Another time, another place. Maybe we'll get to that as we proceed.
So going back to the shower, if you take a lukewarm shower, there's no issue with you're heating up the water and it's not.
So we're saying that you basically there, because this man said you're using lutzor chayguf, and that's called davar shom b'chol nefesh. That's the base man's finish.
So for the showers, there's no issue with heating the water.
No, that's the problem. According to Tosus, that's the issue. I'm heating the water for a normal tzor chayguf.
He considers, so the lukewarm doesn't
he
help.
Considers that, no, he considers for something that lukewarm is more of a shom b'chol nefesh than a hot shower. Why don't you get it?
But even so, you're still heating the water above Yad Soled, so you're just not using it at that temperature. When you turn on the hot water, you put in cold water.
That's right. But I'm doing something at the tzarek. It's almost like when I'm washing dishes. If you think about it, when I wash dishes on Yom Tov, the water that I'm heating is not the water that I'm using. The water that I'm using is the water that's right there. I'm heating more water. So, but since it's impossible for me to get the water without heating the other water, it's also nichol.
What about
Dutchemish? Dutchemishes are, depending on what you think about Dutchemishes. So if you're an Eretz Yisrael digger person, you follow Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Shlomo Zalman is very, very make about Dutchemishes. If you're in America, so Rav Moshe is very, very machmir about Dutchemishes. Different opinions about the Dutchemishes. Is it the same as the regular or better? A different argument about the chemishes. We don't have too many of them around here anyway, so we don't do. Anyway, so what's my dilemma in terms of these sugyas? So in terms of pure Hilchos Shabbos, they don't really belong in Bishul, because they're really Isurim, at least some of them are Isurim of Havara. Because according to many Rishonim, the reason why a lot of these things were instituted was because it's a gezeirah shenichat b'gecholim. We're afraid you make up to stir the coals, which would be a violation of havara of lighting a fire, which is way, 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 way down the line in terms of malacha. So they don't technically belong in Hilchos Bishul. However, one could argue that they do belong in Bishul because, according to some Rishonim, there are mechzik and bashal issues involved, and then be gezeirah shemayar siyach, which may be surim of Bishul involved. So one could even justify it on conceptual grounds. One could also justify it just on psychological grounds. And most people, when they think of cooking, if you say, you go to home and tell your wife, we finished the sugya of Bishul, we've been coming every Sunday morning for the last 6 months, I know everything about Bishul. The first thing she asks is, okay, so now tell me, when I put food into the car, oh, I don't know anything about that, we didn't know about that. We're not going to go about that for the last 6 months. So what, how am I wrong? What did you learn for the last 6 months? I learned the attempting shower on Yom Tov. So what she would say, maybe go to another shiur on Sunday morning. So it's hard for me to leave this handy. So I had different kufas in my life. Again, yes, we'll test when you learned the Sefer Shabbos the first time, we put it at the end, right? Right, correct. That's what your notes, all these sugyas that we're about to embark upon are at the end. But when I did it the second time around, whatever we learned the Sefer Shabbos again, so I switched it to put it into Bishul. Part of the reason was is that at the end, it found itself in June's month. There were three guys left in Yeshiva, so I figured that we wanted one of three guys to know these halachas. So we moved it up. So we're going to move it up here also. We're going to try to talk about it. Now. So we're going to begin the three part series, so to speak, which will probably take us a lot more than 3 weeks. The Isur of Shehiyah, Hachzor, and Akbana, they are very, very much related one to another. Shehiyah refers to leaving food on the fire before Shabbos. Hachzor refers to putting food back onto the fire on Shabbos. And Akbana means insulating food in such a way, which is also sometimes potentially problematic. So let's begin with the first one, the Isra of Shehiyah, the Isra of leaving food in the fire before Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us in the first part of Masechta Shabbos that min HaTorah there should be absolutely nothing wrong with this. Why? Because why is this any different than setting up any other system that Malach is going to play out during the course of Shabbos, which is okay? So let's say, for example, the Mishnah says, if I set up an animal trap on a Friday afternoon, and I know for a fact that animals are going to get trapped on Shabbos, that's hetogomer, nothing wrong at all. Not min HaTorah, not min HaTorah, hetogomer. There's one opinion that says it's also min HaTorah, that's Bishamah. Bishamah holds, there's an issue called Shvisas Kalim on Shabbos. The same way my animal can't work for me, so too my utensils can't work for me, so my trap can't work for me. But we categorically reject Bishamah, we follow Bishamah, there is no such issue, not min HaTorah, not min HaTorah. So the general, the starting point of the sugya is, it's hetogomer min HaTorah to set up systems on Friday where malachas take place. One possible exception would be if a lot of noise is made by the system that we spoke about in the past. And if you set up a system on Friday, like a grinding in a water wheel, the Gemara says, so even though, technically speaking, I set up on Friday, the Malacha is going on through Shabbos, it's making a racket. Making such a noise, it's drawing attention, that's what's called Afshamil, so that's a problem. But they're about it for a variety of reasons. That's the reason why, let's say, you can't leave on a washing machine on Friday afternoon, you can't leave on a dishwasher, you can't leave on anything from before Shabbos, anything that makes a lot of noise. Don't ask me why you're allowed to leave air conditionings on from before Shabbos. I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm not saying you're not allowed to. So we'll rely on the rest of Klal Yisrael that you're allowed to, and no one's quite sure what the answer to that question is. But I have some theories, but not for that. Anyway, back for that test. But one of the few exceptions with the Rabbanon, even though no noise is made, is cooking. If you leave food on the fire from before Shabbos and the cooking continues into Shabbos, so that's an outright issur midrabbanan, and that's what's called shehiyah l'shalos to leave something on. That's a prohibition midrabbanan. What is that based on? The Gemara says it's based on an entirely different consideration. It's not a bishul issue, that's why it's not really part of their sugya. It's a gezeira midrabbanan that you may come to stir the coals of the fire, which would itself be a very, very serious problem. Stirring coals on Shabbos is a potentially double issur. It's an issur of havara, of lighting a fire, you're taking coals that are basically not lit up anymore, and you're igniting them by stirring them together, you're igniting the dead coals, and you're also going to be potentially extinguishing some of the live coals. So that's a whole sugi masechus krisos about. Is it one chavos, two chavos, one skilo, two skilos? Nice. Once you're ready in this skill, it's not going to matter too much the second time around. So the bottom line is that it's also better. No shalom about it's also better to stir coals on Shabbos. And the Yafo Chazam, and especially the Zayin Rabbanan, don't pick the food in the fire, because there you may come to stir the coals. Shevichat can come. Everybody accepts that gezeira. That was absolutely unequivocal. Everyone accepts that gezeira. But the Tanoim did have a machlokes, I guess, how far we should make the gezeira. So the very institution of the gezeira was not negotiable. The question that the Tanoim were arguing about was, do you reach a point where the gezeira doesn't really make any sense? So everybody agrees, yes, that sometimes you reach a point that there's nothing to worry about. It means it's so unlikely that the person is going to be b'chad b'chad, it's a milsul b'shchicha. So at a certain point you reach where I could say comfortably there's nothing to worry about. Now the question becomes, where is that point? So everyone agrees there's an issur shehiyah. Everyone agrees there's a point where shehiyah, the issur is lifted. And now you have a small technical machlekes at the time. Where do you draw the line? So this was a machlekes between the Tana Chananya and everybody else, all his colleagues, the Chachamim. So Chananya's opinion was that once you reach the point that the food is edible, it's edible, it's edible. So then why would the guy go ahead and machat v'chol? Machat v'chol means you're going to come up from shul Friday and go, Val, the food's not edible yet again. Better get those coals and moving right away. Chananya says, if the food's already edible, what's there to be concerned with? So if it's edible, what's considered to be edible? Says Chananya. Back to a shiur from Nuchos Bishul, remember? Like a baby soy. Says Chananya, once food is a third cooked or half cooked, it's technically edible. Haraya, the god of Ben Drusoy, and that's how he eats his meat all the time. So since in theory you could eat it that way, well, when a person walks into the house and sees that the food is already half-cooked, third-cooked, whatever you think the Shia Machmed Drusoy is, so he's not going to be so tzahitz, he's not going to be so nervous. No, we'll eat it the way it is. No need to stir the coals. If he walks in and he sees the food is not even Ben Drusoy, then it's going to be a disaster. There's nothing to eat for supper. So he's going to start quickly to get the food to cook faster. So Chananya says, once you reach the point of Machmed Drusoy, you're good to go. And the Rabbanim responded and said, no. Machmed Drusoy makes a lot of sense when you're dealing with a deraisa d'kashya, is it cold bishul, not cold bishul. Here, this is a psychological question. Namely, what are the odds that the person is going to get nervous and get upset and he's going to start to stir the coals? So Chachamim looked around and said, most people don't like their food, Machmed Drusoy. Most people like to eat the food as possible. They like it to be really, really edible. So therefore, the Chacham said, just because it happens to have reached the sheer Machmed Drusoy, that doesn't avoid the gezeira. The concern is still there, and therefore the gezeira is still in full force. At what point would the gezerah disappear? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, according to the machmir, according to the chavim, once it's the spasha kotzorach, it should be all over. So the chavim say, you know, even that's not true. Why? But something is the spasha kotzorach, it's fully cooked. Sometimes stirring the coals may still make it a little bit better. And that's what the Gemara differentiates between what's called mitzdamik biyafalo versus mitzdamik peralo. When you have a food that's fully cooked and you stir it a little more and you heat it up a little bit more, sometimes the heating makes it better and sometimes it shrivels up and ruins the food. You can tell all my great knowledge in terms of what's going on in the kitchen. So say the Chachavim, if food is not yet nisbashu gotzorcho, then for sure there's a gezeirah shemichat v'gichol. If it's already nisbashu gotzorcho, then we can negotiate, then we can discuss. So if it's mitzdamik, biyafalo, we're still weary, we're still in the back of our mind nervous, the person may still have an incentive to stir, and therefore the exertion is going to apply. But if it's already reached the point, it's not always in a special circle, it's mitzdamik v'ralo, it would be to his disadvantage to stir the food, and even the chum says, okay, the buck stops here, the yisad rabbanu shahir stops here. So you have two different opinions from one extreme to another. Where does the Yisr Shehi end? Everyone agrees there's an Yisr. Everyone agrees that there are Rabbanon Shemichat B'Gecholim. The question is, at what point are we comfortable lifting that Yisr? So according to Chananya, once it's already the point of Mechav and Yisr, we're good to go. And according to the Chum, no, not good to go yet. Not even Nisbash Kotzorcho is good enough. It's got to be Nisbash Kotzorcho plus. If the super-duper Nisbash to the point of Nisbash Kotzorcho, then and only then will give you a green light and Shehi is no longer a concern. How do we bask in that?
So what about a case kind of like you're in the middle? So for instance, taking cholent out of the pot while the cholent is still on the...
Wait. We were still here. We're just leaving stuff on for Friday. Taking things off and back on again is going to be a whole other ballgame. So even the simplest case, I'm leaving a crock pot show from before Shabbos. I'm leaving a pot of chicken on the fire from before Shabbos.
Right, and you take a spoon.
No, I'm not even touching it yet. You're talking about more serious problems. It's very simple. I want to leave my food, and I'm going away. I'll be back in 6 hours from now. What's the din? So is that a problem of Shehi, or is that not a problem of Shehi? On the level of Durabana, is that a problem of Shehi or not? So how do we pass in the Aloha? So if you'd ask me, I'd say, what's the Shaila? Chananya, as great as Chananya was, it was Das Yochid, it was one time. So everybody else, the Chum disagrees. I would say, what's the Shaila? Of course you have to be Machmir with the Shaila. So that's what some of them say. So no brain, Yach Rama Charam. The problem is that the first two dafim of the third Perek Masechta Shabbos, Perek Kira, spend literally two dafim to try to figure out who is the author of the Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos. There's a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos that is so cryptic. Kira is a group of Kashmir, but you don't know how to read the Mishnah. You're not even sure the Mishnah is talking about Shehi, about Avzar. It's not clear at all how to read this Mishnah. The Gemara goes back and forth and back and forth to figure out who's the author of the Mishnah. And the Gemara keeps on pushing it into Chananya and says, no, not necessarily. And maybe it's Chananya and maybe not. And then the Gemara goes up, right? He says, but it's too daft and too hard to put Chananya in the best light possible. And finally the Gemara concludes that we don't even know how to read the Mishnah. We're not even sure what the Mishnah was about, but anyone else is saying about the topic. And the Gemara just kind of falls flat. It kind of just ends. The sugya, the curtain goes down, the sugya ends. So the Rishonim have two different ways to interpret what happens now. Maybe we go from here. So some Rishonim say it was a very nice attempt to try to get the Mishnah to be like Chananya, but the Gemara did not succeed, and therefore there is no Stam Mishnah that supports Chananya. So if there would be a Stam Mishnah like Chananya, that would be a big proof to his Halakha Stam Mishnah. But there is no Stam Mishnah like Chananya, so therefore Yach Ram L'Charam and call it a day. And other Rishonim say, no, you see that the Amoraim bend over backwards, they were doing everything in their koach to try to get Chananya in the best light possible. You know why? Because in the heart of hearts, they knew that we followed Chananya. That's the bottom line. Chananya was right in the halacha. Whether we got the mission to read like him or not, I'm not sure. But he was the shita that we're gonna hold on to for dear life. So you had a split in the Rishonim, mamish down the middle, literally 50-50. Half the Rishonim said, from the fact that the Gemara couldn't succeed, there's a raya brew that we don't accept Chananya. And the other Rishonim said, from the fact that the Gemara tried so hard, that's a proof positive that we do accept Chananya. So it happened to be, interestingly, that the split in Rishonim almost entirely split on geographic lines between the Chachmei Ashkenaz and the Chachmei Sfarad. For some strange reason, that almost all the Chachmei Sfarad ended up L'Chachmei and the Shaila, the Rif and the Rambam and the Ramban, and most of the Chachmei Ashkenaz ended up L'Kul, Rashi and Tosfos, and ended up being Maitland and the Shaila. So that's what you find, even within our communities, within Sfarad and Ashkenazim, you find differences, what our take is going to be on the system. What's our starting point in the sugya? So we have a lot of things to talk about. We got. Don't worry, I'll get to you later. Tell your wife. Keep a little away from you on Friday night, okay? But hopefully we'll talk about it. But we'll talk about how this sets the stage for two major, major opinions in the Belia Poskim. Adayam is that, starting point about Shahia, that it's basically okay most of the time, or it's basically not okay most of the time, and then they'll branch out to some of the details, how to get around Shahia, the roles of the Blech and Shabbos, and all other types of contraptions, devices, to try to see how the Shahia plays out for us in this.